Hello, everyone. Before we take a deep dive into all things Clash of Champions with extra special guest co-host Scott Tinsley, who was awesome, by the way, we forgot an entire match from the Clash of Champions Gold Rush pay-per-view going down this Sunday at 7 EST on the WWE Network. And that match is for the women's tag team titles. It's Liv Morgan and Ruby Riott challenging Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler. And because of this build on television, it's a reason why we have to charge our heads and not our hearts in this situation. Due to Scott already recording this episode with me a few hours ago, I am going to offer his written prediction, and I'm going to verbalize it for your listening pleasure just before you listen to the episode in its entirety. And I'm going to quote unquote what he says. Quote, Baszler and Jax are going to retain in very quick fashion. The result and the tag titles at this current point are essentially meaningless. Bring back the Iconics. And I happen to agree with Scott. Baszler and Nia Jax will retain the women's tag team titles, even though they have this love-hate relationship. They are a good team, and hopefully Liv Morgan and Ruby Riott have a pretty standout performance on Sunday, because we need to elevate those titles after Sasha Banks and Bayley did such great work this past summer, and hopefully Baszler and Nia Jax can keep the streak going with a quality match against the Wyatt Squad on Sunday night on the WWE Network at 7 EST, so don't you miss it. Right now, on with the show. Enjoy. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Clash of Champions Gold Rush prediction show right here on WrestleSubtopia. I am your host and humble guide, Keela Cash. Thank you so much for joining me as week 35 of WrestleSubtopia continues. Happy Friday morning, afternoon, and evening to you all. It's a busy week in the worlds of WWE and AEW winds down, but I'm happy to say on this good Friday, I'm not alone, as I have an extra special guest co-host from the Wacky World of Wrestling YouTube channel and Rewriting WWE, which is a much superior show than what you got on Monday Night Raw. Reliving all the highs and lows from WWE in video game form for 2K lovers out there, I proudly present to you Scott Tinsley from Down Under, and I promise you I will not do the Iconics.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. The country and I of Australia, thank you very much for not including that Iconics aspect into there. Thank you very much, Keela, for having me on. That's right. I am Scott, aka Professor Pro Wrestling from the Wacky World of Wrestling YouTube channel. We do a Rewriting WWE 2K series where we start from WWE 2K15 and follow a AI-driven and simulated universe mode going from WWE 2K15 all the way through to WWE 2K20. As I said, it's a very, very interesting ride we've gone on. The community and I have gone on many twists and turns together as we've just finished WWE 2K15. We will start WWE 2K16 this coming Monday. But as you said, more often than not, it's very, very interesting that an AI system in a video game can actually create a better weekly program than the creative team on Monday Night Raw and Friday Night SmackDown. It's very, very concerning when you want to look at it like that, Keela.
Yes, but at least you are aware that someone smart is putting the shows together, unlike 50 people on one creative team for WWE. So you are doing something right. And I do have a question regarding once you get to 2K20, will those storyline glitches be included?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's part of the fun of it. So as I said, we as a community, we will just sit there and watch the twists and turns and everything that has happened. Many surprising championship changes. Lots of old faces and a lot of reminiscing going on in the series right now. So, yeah, it's warts and all here at the Wacky World of Wrestling, the Rewriting WWE 2K series. I should say as well, if you are a fan of all sorts of other wrestling gameplay, we will be including that over the coming months and years to come. We'll probably look at including some old WCW, NWO Revenge, Nintendo 64 stuff. We'll probably look at some Fire Pro Wrestling, obviously AEW, and the new independent wrestling game from Virtual Basement will be coming out as well. So with all those kind of release titles, we'll be adding that as well. It truly will be a Wacky World of Wrestling coming to you 7 days a week. So when you're not listening to the Wrestle Soaptopia podcast, my friends, with Keela Cash. Why don't you check out the Wacky World of Wrestling YouTube channel?
And that is how you do a promo, ladies and gentlemen. You cross-promote and you sell your ass off and you make it sound so good. So thank you for that. But as all first-time guests do on this show, I want to know, how did you become a wrestling fan? What was the first thing you saw as a child or a teenager or even an adult to say, wow, this is something I really want to do, that really expanded into this YouTube adventure?
Well, for me, I've been a fan of professional wrestling for the better part of 25 years now. It started with my friends and I just playing the old WWF Attitude video game, and that's when I started to learn what professional wrestling was. His dad had a lot of the old school SummerSlam 88, 86 style VHSs lying around as well. During the school holidays, as a youngster, my mum would take me to the old Blockbusters and Video Easies back in the old days of the VHS, and you know, I just found my way. I always found myself attracted to the professional wrestling VHSs. So, yeah, I started obviously renting them. And then before I knew it, we were watching WCW and WWF pay-per-views. I remember the first one, I think, was WCW World War III 98, I believe it was. And I think from that moment on, I was hooked. I've had sporadic involvements with the professional wrestling scene here in Australia. Lesser-known fact, I went to school with Tennille Dashwood. She was in the same year class or year level as myself, so I know of Emma. But other than that, that is my sort of professional wrestling humble beginnings. And then, as I said, as a grown man, I just continue to fall in love further and further with the product. Obviously, as New Japan, Ring of Honor, Combat Zone, all those kind of promotions became more and more prevalent. And then, obviously, at one point, I've just sort of found myself on YouTube, and it seemed like the best path forward to go down WWE 2K gameplay. Why not merge games with wrestling? So that is my history with professional wrestling, which brings us to this very moment, Keela.
Yes, and by chance, who is your favorite wrestler of all time?
Oh, I don't know. Can anyone answer that, Keela? Do you have a favorite professional wrestler of all time? I don't know how you can actually answer that.
I can say the person that hooked me was definitely The Rock, and there's a certain affection that would never go away, but there are plenty of people that I adore over the years, but that is the first person I saw that really got me hooked in WWE specifically, and for WCW as a very innocent 12-year-old, the first person I saw was Ernest the Cat Miller dancing, and at that time, I thought that was the greatest thing ever until you realize, wow, I am watching the dirt worst of WCW, and you learn about bankruptcy in real time. It's quite an experience.
Yeah, it's a shock to the system, isn't it? Actually, thinking about it now, I think given that WCW was the first thing that I really saw as a pay-per-view, I think for me, probably the NWO as a whole stable was the thing that really caught me. I was much more of a WCW fan than WWF because at the time, my mother wouldn't let me watch a professional wrestling show that had crucifixions or, in quotations, sacrifices happening. So as a young man, I think she preferred that I wear a black and white T-shirt and say, "For life," every 2 seconds rather than watch crucifixions every Monday night.
So I am presuming that The Undertaker was not on the other side of that dial, as there was a lot of sacrifices going on and arranged marriages and burning of stuff and Kane coming out of everywhere, basically underneath the ring, from the ring to the ring, over the ring. Yeah, so I can understand why that was not exactly appropriate programming, as there was literal sacrifices and kayfabe forum going on.
Mean Mark Calloway was not a regular on my TV screens here in Australia.
Well, he is now on the WWE Network 24/7. So if you want to relive those moments that you could not as a child, you can check it out at your leisure. But it's not about the dead man today, as we have to discuss the Clash of Champions Gold Rush. And yes, for whatever reason, WWE for the last 2 or 3 months, they have the tagline every pay-per-view, from Backlash, the greatest wrestling match ever, to the horror show at Extreme Rules, to SummerSlam, you'll never see it coming. Payback was not good enough to have a tagline, apparently, but Gold Rush is added to the agenda for Clash of Champions. And I have to give it up to the WWE marketing department for at least trying to make these pay-per-views special, because Lord knows the television, at least on Mondays, has not been very good, but Fridays has been pretty decent to build up this pay-per-view that looks good on paper, But my God, the execution creatively has been terrible.
100%. When you first reached out to me and said, let's do a Clash of the Champions pay-per-view prediction, I was very, very excited, Keela. I thought, you know, we're going to look at like Ric Flair and Arn Anderson taking on the Hollywood Blondes. You know, we're going to have the likes of Big Van Vader, Sid Vicious, Sting, Ron Simmons, all of them are set to appear. But then I thought, it's Clash of the Clash of Champions, as you say, Gold Rush. And that certainly dampens the mood quite a bit, doesn't it? The WWE product on a Monday and Friday, or the red and the blue brand, it is something else, isn't it? Kudos to you, Keela, and anyone else who watches this on an ongoing weekly basis. You guys are the true heroes and diehards, because from a creative standpoint, this thing is in a free fall. It's near sleep-inducing, to be honest, and much like slowing down on a highway to see a car crash, you're almost like drawn to it to see how much further things can plummet from a creative standpoint. Financially, they're doing better than ever. But as you say, let's look at all the positives. Let's dissect the card. As I said, it's had more than 1 week build. So let's see what they can actually deliver. It's a promising card, but whether the in-ring action will match it, we have to wait and see, don't we?
We really do. And the good news for SummerSlam and Payback, without a tagline for whatever reason, is that they were good in the ring. But then the television happened on Monday and it all went to hell. So we can take comfort in the fact that at least the wrestlers will work their asses off and put on a good show. And heaven knows what the creative is going to be on Monday, but we shall see. But we can say two back-to-back WWE pay-per-views did not infuriate me. And I could not say that in July for the horror show at Extreme Rules. But let's kick things off with, on a pre-show, for reasons I don't understand, because I would presume all of your championships should be on the actual pay-per-view on the network, but is Asuka defending the Raw Women's Championship against Zelina Vega? And I immediately have flashbacks to AJ Styles and Cedric Alexander, this time last year in Cedric's hometown of North Carolina, Charlotte to be exact, on the pre-show, and he hardly got any offense and lost in his hometown. And you would think that with his hometown loving him, and perhaps maybe on a faint chance he wins, you want that crowd support. He never got it, and I always question that decision. But on the flip side, you have the Usos and the New Day from a few years ago at SummerSlam on the pre-show, had the best match of the night on the pre-show. So that might give Asuka and Zelina Vega some motivation to put on a show on the pre-show and say, you should have put us on the main show to make us really stand out. I think due to this match being rushed, with Zelina going from manager to wrestler in like a week's time is a bit too much to process. They should have a good match, not a great match. And Asuka is one of my stone cold locks to retain the championship. And hopefully in the fall, WWE builds up quality opponents for her because she's too good to have last minute championship contenders coming out the woodwork in Zelina Vega and Mickie James and Natalya, who was supposed to get a shot, but apparently she's been forgotten about again.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think what you're talking about here is perhaps the biggest qualm that a lot of fans have with the WWE product at the moment. And that is that if you look at actually up and down the card right now, just look at the talent that's actually on this card. And, you know, when you look at the talent, obviously it's included in NXT as well. They're absolutely like full to the brim. And then they go off and do things where they, as you say, position people in almost like nooks and crannies where it's very, very hard for them to either produce a good match or, you know, work their way out of. I 100% agree with you. I think Asuka is an absolute lock to retain this. I think they've positioned her probably in a pre-show contest because I think you're right. I think it's probably a case of the fact that Zelina Vega probably hasn't got the chops in ring to actually deliver a competent professional wrestling match for probably any more than about 5 minutes. As you say, it's very, very interesting to see what happens with Zelina. She's literally a fantastic talker. She's a heat magnet when she's at ringside. She's a great valet, and we can see obviously the history that she's got with Andrade, Cien Almas down in NXT. But I do have some concerns about how Asuka is going to have to carry Zelina in this one. Unless Zelina Vega is perhaps maybe like a subtle mixed martial arts or black belt specialist, it's beyond me how they present this as a bit of a legit contest. But I'm with you, Asuka, for me in this one.
All right, now it's time for the main card, and we're going to stay with the cheeseburger, according to Roman Reigns, that is Monday Night Raw. And we have the Raw Tag Team titles with the Street Profits, Montez Ford and Angelo Dawkins defending the titles for what, the 1,000th time this year against Andrade and Angel Garza. And I'm going to let Scott take point on this match first.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong here, please, Keila. But so 2 weeks ago on Monday Night Raw, or Monday Night Snore, or Monday Night Ball, whichever you prefer, 2 weeks ago, I thought I saw Angel Garza and Andrade Cien Almas. They look to be tearing apart at the seams. And then obviously Zelina Vega looks like she just had enough and she said, I'm up and out of here. I'm a wrestler now as well as a ballet. But now then on the previous week, this week's episode of Monday Night Raw, apparently Angel Garza and Andrade Cien Almas appear to at least be back on the same sort of page. So look, we're heading obviously into a Raw Tag Team Championship contest. I think the Street Profits are going to win. The reason that is because I don't think creative has much more for the Street Profits. I think at the end of the day, if you've got the Viking Raiders or Warriors, whatever they want to call themselves these days, if they're fighting down in a basement along with Shane McMahon sweating over a microphone, calling themselves underground, I think at the end of the day, you're going to see the Street Profits retain. It doesn't seem like it's worth making a switch onto Angel Garza and Andrade, especially when they don't seem to know what they want to do with it. So Professor Pro Wrestling's tip here, Keila, is that we're going to have a Street Profits championship retain.
I really want to say it. I really do. Because I was looking forward to this match dating back to WrestleMania until Andrade got hurt and we got it back this summer. And it's been an incredibly lopsided feud with Street Profits winning singles matches, tag team matches, rematches, all the matches they have beaten Andrade and Angel Garza. And I think both men can be a comparable tag team if they're not saddled with every other week they're breaking up. And then they're a team on Monday and there is no backstage vignette explaining why they have worked things out to be a team once again. And you have to go on social media to find a YouTube video to find out how they're getting along all over again. So it's really distracting as a viewer when that logic loophole is simply there and there's no gaps to fill it unless you're there to seek everything out WWE on YouTube and Twitter. But I have this sneaky suspicion that despite losing over and over and over again, that Andrade and Angel Garza are actually going to pull out the victory, become the new Raw Tag Team Champions in a division that is terribly thin right now. Viking Raiders, unfortunately, Ivar is out injured for well over a year due to a neck injury. Eric is by himself. There are no other tag teams of note that are legit. And at this point, maybe it's time to merge the titles between Raw and SmackDown, have one set floating between both shows, like the women's tag team titles, and call it a day because both divisions are paper thin in the tag team ranks, which is a shame because tag team wrestling can work when you put the teams in the proper position to thrive.
100%. And you look at the other tag team championship contest, which we'll obviously discuss fairly soon. You know, the champions being Antonio Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura. I mean, you're talking about Antonio Cesaro is one of the most prominent tag team professional wrestlers of the last 15 years. Just go back and check out his work, not only in Ring of Honor with the likes of Chris Hero as the Kings of Wrestling, but you just go back and check out anything he did back in the days of Chikara. And then the other man holding the strap is obviously Shinsuke Nakamura, a former IWGP Intercontinental Champion. He's main evented a Wrestle Kingdom before. So I 100% agree with you. It's time that you merge the belts together, begin to create yourself a solid tag team division. Professional wrestling fans, they love wrestling. They love the in-ring product. Everything else is flowery around it. But if you can't get the job done in the ring, then it doesn't mean much. So I agree with you. I think you need to blend the belts together, then suddenly have yourself a decent tag team division with some depth in it, and then sort of go from there. But yes, look, I guess we're going to, Keila, I didn't want to have an argument straight up on this first podcast, but I guess we're going to have to part ways on this one.
I'm just trying to add some excitement to a very thin, sad division. I love the Street Profits. I love them. I love the red solo cups flowing out of the sky. I enjoy it. But when you beat a team repeatedly, you have to assume at some point the other team has to win just for credibility's sake. So I'm just hoping for something different. And in a perfect world, it'll be Rey Mysterio and Dominic before Aaliyah turns on a whole family and they become tag team champions for a bit once Rey heals up. And that might have been the plan until the triceps injury kind of derailed things for this pay-per-view, which is understandable. But my God, it's hard to care about this match emotionally when we've seen this team get beat down over and over and over again. But the match hopefully will be good if they're given time. And speaking of tag teams, let's talk about SmackDown, as you just mentioned them. It is Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura, the reigning defending SmackDown Tag Team Champions, going up against Lucha House Party. We don't know which combination will be in this match on Sunday, but this could be a sneaky good match because all four guys are super talented, and I've been championing Lucha Brothers, not Lucha Brothers, even though they do remind me of Lucha Brothers in a perfect world. The combination of Kalisto, Lince Dorado, and Gran Metalik can be Pentagon Jr. and Rey Fénix from AEW if they had the proper booking and storyline support, which they are starting to get with Kalisto being more egotistical since his return. And who knew that getting six-pack abs can make you an asshole and make you the de facto leader of Lucha House Party. So congratulations to him for that. But as for the match itself, it should be really good. I don't foresee a title change. As we mentioned earlier, the tag team ranks are very thin, and I expect this to be a good match. But when you're down to Heavy Machinery, Lucha House Party, Cesaro, and Shinsuke Nakamura and Miz and Morrison, who don't even give a fuck about the titles, are chasing after a briefcase that doesn't belong to them, that tells you all you need to know about the SmackDown Tag Team Division.
Yes, it's very, very desolate there on the blue brand. I sort of wrote myself some notes here, Keela, so if you don't mind, I'll read them out to you verbatim. I wrote, nobody cares and neither should you. As you say, the match will be, from an in-ring perspective, it'll be quite good. I can see Cesaro having a great time throwing around the likes of Lince, Gran Metalik, Kalisto. All those guys, they know how to work, so they will put on a good contest. But I don't believe at the moment that they have been built up as a legitimate threat. They've obviously got a few issues within the ranks to sort out themselves. So I've sort of said no one cares and neither should you. If the Lucha House Party win the straps, Keela, I say we riot, or at least I will here in Melbourne. I'll be a furious 30-year-old screaming in my TV. I just don't think that it's worth putting the straps on the Lucha House Party yet. Keep them on Cesaro and Shinsuke, and we'll sort of see what... I think you've hit the nail on the head. I think Heavy Machinery and the guys like Miz and Morrison as well, that is another two teams you can instantly put into a feud with the likes of Cesaro and Shinsuke. It instantly elevates the importance of the SmackDown Tag Team Championships. I don't see the Lucha House Party getting the win here.
Me neither, despite their talent, but at least they are getting some semblance of storyline support, which they weren't getting for, what, 2.5 years? And they got caught up to Monday Night Raw or 205 Live. So at least we know they can speak and they have really nice ring gear. They always stand out. So there's hope. Not much, but there's hope yet. But let's go back to that cheeseburger known as Monday Night Raw, according to Roman Reigns, as we have Apollo Crews challenging Bobby Lashley for the United States Championship. And I'm going to let Scott take point on this rematch to a rematch we've already saw. What, at Payback a few weeks ago?
Of course. Now, would you mind, Keela, if I just clarified a little bit here? Would you mind if I took us down memory lane just to get my head straight? Because obviously here at the Wacky World of Wrestling, I spend so much time in a AI simulated universe. So would you mind if I just sort of recapped for us everything that led us to this Bobby Lashley Apollo Crews contest? Would that be okay?
Absolutely. You can have the floor.
Okay. All right. So... of course, the WWE's latest attempts at a hostile takeover sees the likes of Mia Yim, fellow Australian Shane Thorne, Dijak Dukovic, and even Dio Madden all banding together recently amongst other names. You know, this friendship obviously started with them, obviously all having gone and bought face paint and Bane masks at the local costume shop. And what have they called themselves again across all this? Is it the Oddities? it's not the Oddities. It's hang on. I've got it. It's Aces and Eights. That's it. Hang on. It's not right. That's TNA. I got it. It's the Nexus. Here we go. Hang on. Checking WWE.com. Retribution. Of course, it is Retribution. And of course, in addition to their choices of attire, which look very similar to that of the cast of the Mad Max movie franchise, they of course have specifically chosen some names to truly put fear of death into their opponents. And what sort of names would you come up with, Keela? Would you come up with names like perhaps Slapjack? Maybe T-Bar? Mace? You know, can you imagine Vince McMahon sitting there with his yellow notepad sitting in the top office of Titan Tower, and he's saying to himself, you're going to be called Slapjack, and you're Mace. My God, you're menacing. Ah, I can feel the retribution from here. You know, like, it's just, it's insane. I don't know what I'm watching right now. And then on Monday Night Raw, and again, please stop me, Keela, please stop me if I'm going on a tangent here, but unless I'm mistaken, did the Raw commentary team announce this week that Retribution had signed with the WWE? They were now actually contracted performers on Monday Night Raw?
Yes, and not only that, they are contracted to raise hell between the hours of 8 and 11 Eastern every Monday night. They can't even raise hell on Wednesdays, Fridays, or pay-per-views. They have Sundays off. They have a better plan than Triple H did back in the day when he didn't want to work Tuesdays. So good for them.
It's so specific, isn't it? So much Retribution in such a small amount of time. But, you know, let us get this straight. So you professional wrestlers out there that might be listening here on the Wrestle Soaptopia podcast, you guys, you're out there taking bumps, you know, for $10 and a hot dog every week. Your travel expenses aren't covered. You're driving up and down the freeways. You're running that social media game white hot every day in the hopes, the sheer hopes of one day being given an opportunity to perform under the bright lights of the WWE. And all you had to do was harass employees, vandalize equipment, play with the lighting rigs every television show, and go buy some sweet Mad Max style headgear. And there you go. You're in a contract. Like, I feel like this is absolutely insane what I'm talking about. You want to talk about Retribution and you've got just like petty violence and petty annoyance. You know, what happened to not negotiating with terrorists? You know, like, we better sign these guys. There's too much ruthless aggression coming from these guys. You know, and then, and sorry, Keela, and sorry, that's just come from, I'm sorry, the blood pressure's gone up through the spikes now. Let me also clarify something else. The last time I checked, the Hurt Business were a heel stable. Like, MVP had assembled Bobby Lashley, Shelton Benjamin, and recently Cedric Alexander to create a heel group or a bunch of bad guys. So why do they suddenly care about a group of Batman cosplay enthusiasts called the Ragamuffins or the Future Endeavor? Or Retribution, sorry, as they're you know, they're dubbed here. Why do they suddenly care about upholding the fabric and honor of all things that are WWE? Why? Don't they technically want the same thing because they want to be the most dominant stable and rule the roost? It just makes no sense in flipping these factions backward and forward on a weekly basis and expecting your audience to remain loyal and interested. All of this to say, Keela, is my long-winded way of saying Bobby Lashley is going to defeat Apollo Crews for the United States Championship. He's going to retain it. You can expect a lot of shenanigans, I think, from multiple groups. You might even see, obviously, the Hurt Business. You might see the fearsome duo of T-Bar and Slapjack. Jeff Jarrett's somewhere looking for gimmick infringement. You might even see Ricochet floating around as well. But look, the Hurt Business, they need Bobby Lashley to retain. He makes the group feel legitimate. He makes them feel big time. And I expect to see Apollo Crews staring up at the lights after this one.
That was an all-time great rant. That might have been the greatest rant in the history of this show that has topped my rage at moments of stupidity from WWE this year. So you have won the prize, sir. It really encapsulated everything that's wrong with Retribution. But I will say this, despite how dopey and dumb this is from a logistical standpoint, from all logic, T-Bar, the artist formerly known as Dominik Dijakovic, is winning Twitter because he's embracing this bullshit by being sarcastically awesome on Twitter. Slapjack as well. Hey, Shane Thorne, how you doing? And Dio Madden. Hi, Mace. What's happening? They are really saving this on Twitter. And I have gotten laughs for the last couple of days because embracing this madness. And at this point, why the fuck not?
Why swim against the shit, hey? Just let it just, you know, swim along with it. But Keela, I have to ask, before you get to your Bobby Lashley and Apollo Crews prediction, can I ask one thing?
Yes.
Can I get a Vince McMahon impression of you saying Mace, T-Bar, or Slapjack? I don't mind which one. Can I get a Vince McMahon impression from you?
Oh, gosh. Let me see if I can get a good one out of from the gut. T-Bar!
I love it.
There we go. Now that you mentioned the Retribution naming ceremony, there needed to be a day of documentary. The Day of Retribution got their names exclusively on the WWE Network. Join us as Vince McMahon, Christian, T-Bar, Mace, Slapjack, Hungry Jack, all the Jacks, Jack of Spades. I mean, my gosh. And I feel very happy that Mia Yim and Mercedes Martinez were not given names. Dear God, don't fuck them up next. But in any event, as for the match itself, a match I've seen at Payback, which was not good enough to get a tagline. Yes, Payback will get justice from me for not having a tagline. But in any event, I thought that their match last month was pretty good. But once again, when we have the Hurt Business, who I love collectively, they have the t-shirt game down, the music awesome, they're badasses, but they deviate from beating up 20 people, 4 on 20, and then they have time to face Apollo Crews, a babyface, Ricochet, a babyface, and they're all heels. So it's very confusing. And as a fan, it's hard to invest on a group that's legit and two guys that, quite frankly, at this point, in Apollo Crews or Ricochet, should say, I'm waving the white flag, I'm joining the Hurt Business, the end.
Yeah, it sort of seems a little bit silly. Like, just if you can't beat them, join them. NWO for life, baby. It was easy to have half the roster just join them. So, yeah, I agree. Just rather than get your ass kicked every Monday night, just join them and be part of the ass kicking.
Yes, and as for my prediction, should be a good match, but I'm picking Bobby Lashley for the win. It's obvious. It's a Stone Cold lock. I don't see a change. Now, at some point, Cedric Alexander has to look lovingly at that belt and say, that should be me. Now, I'm not saying let's happen next week. Let's give it time to marinate, because at some point, this group should advance the future that I've been preaching about a lot on this podcast. So hopefully we will get Cedric Alexander ready to go as a champion at some point and add some more members to the Hurt Business to really elevate the youth movement in WWE that is sorely needed at the moment, because Paul Heyman tried, and it was an 18-month process that Vince did not want to wait for whatever reason, and now we got this. And at least Slow and Steady was better than what the fuck is going on with people every single week on Monday Night Raw. And that's a shame, because you do have the talent, but it takes patience to grow a base of people that can get over as stars. It happened in the 90s, it can happen in the 2000s, and now the 20-teens and 20s as well. You have to have the patience to build stars up. You can't be wishy-washy. You can't be impatient. It takes time. You have to build trust back with your fan base. And the Hurt Business, despite the veterans who I all love, they do need to add some extra pieces, preferably Apollo Crews or Ricochet. Give in.
And this goes back to right what we were saying before. At the end of the day, the modern day professional wrestling fan, in the 80s, it was all about, you know, the characters, you know, the gobbledygooker, you know, and Repo Man and all these kind of like insane characters. Then in the 90s, we transitioned into that shock television where, as you say, we had crucifixions left, right and center, and we had women wearing barely any clothes. And it was all for the viewers. And now I would say probably, and I would actually say, and this might be a little bit controversial, I'd love to hear what you think and the rest of your audience as well here. I would say since TNA started and you had the likes of the X Division and Ring of Honor was born, basically from about 2002 to 2003, a lot of the last decade has been based around in-ring product. You've got Shelton Benjamin, who is a hell of a wrestler, if given the opportunity. Obviously, the years have sort of slowed him down a little bit now, but he is a fantastic in-ring performer. We know that Cedric Alexander is a phenomenal performer. You just need to let Bobby Lashley be Bobby Lashley. You just need to sign a bunch of bodies to come into the promotion and say, yep, I'll get my ass kicked for the next 6 weeks from Bobby Lashley. And it's gonna work. As you say, things take time, but all you need at the moment is a decent character that people can get behind, that people can believe, that you can market, and then just let the performer do what they're paid to do. You are signing them as a professional wrestler. Let them do what they do and the audience will come. It's the same reason why the cruiserweight division didn't start in the WWE. You didn't need to worry about all these kind of characters. You just need to give these guys 10 minutes and let them do what they do.
Absolutely. And hopefully WWE can get back to basics, because it's not rocket science. It's not hard. It's very simple. You just have to be patient. The fans will come. Yes, you have really turned them off over the last couple of years, but you can always do a refresh and try to do the right thing, because it's not hard. It's very, very simple at the end of the day. Next up, we have back to SmackDown, Filet Mignon Land, is Sami Zayn, who is allegedly the Intercontinental Champion, Jeff Hardy, who is actually the Intercontinental Champion, and AJ Styles dueling it out in a triple threat match for the IC title. in a ladder match on top of that as well. And I was very worried for Sami Zayn at first because I have not seen him have a good match in 2 years due to the double shoulder surgery that has really slowed him down. But this past Friday on SmackDown, him and AJ Styles had a great match. I saw the Sami Zayn I loved from NXT, from the main roster before the injuries, and I have hope. But I'm very scared because it's a ladder match and you have to take bumps, and I pray he takes them safely. And that goes for AJ and Jeff Hardy as well, because they're in their 40s. They're getting up there. Their bodies have wear and tear. So hopefully this is a good match, and I am picking Jeff Hardy for the win. No need to do a title change right now, but it's really good to see Sami Zayn back in his element and happy to say, I woke up yesterday morning, I felt like hell, but damn it, it felt so good. And that makes me happy because I know he's doing better than he was even a year ago.
Yeah, this is one of the two matches that I really struggled to get my head around as to what preview or prediction I want to go with. You know, this to me, this is going to be either really, really good and potentially steal the show, or it's going to be really, really bad. As I said, you've got obviously many of the performers that are in their 40s. I've only just hit my 30s and I wake up in average state every day. So, and I'm not performing in ladder matches and asked to take bumps. So obviously, as you say, we've got perhaps one of the greatest in-ring performers of the last decade in AJ Styles. We've got the longer enduring daredevil, obviously Jeff Hardy, and Sami Zayn, as you say, who is a phenomenal in-ring worker and under a mask as El Generico, delivered some of the best ladder wars that we've ever seen in Ring of Honor. You know, the Intercontinental Championship, it's being hung in the air. Three thrill seekers are going to try and grab it. As you say, the scene, the Intercontinental Championship scene, is a little bit convoluted at the moment. A lot of people going for it. One said that they, you know, one said they should be the champion. The other said that, oh, I should be the champion and I've stolen the belt. And the other said, can I rent it for a little bit? I think that the creative team doesn't quite know what they want to do with this. They've just sort of thrown three big names in together and said, here you go. I'm going to probably lean towards, I'm going to risk creating another fight here, Keela. And I'm going to actually go with AJ. The reason I go with AJ is because I think from an in-ring perspective, he's the most versatile. He's also perhaps the most consistent character and personality that's on a show on a week-to-week basis. And I think you can maneuver AJ easier than perhaps you can with Sami Zayn and Jeff Hardy. Jeff Hardy, we know, obviously sort of tends to have only three or four storylines that he sort of revolves around these days. You know, he's either a drunk or he's got alcohol addiction problems, you know, floating around him. He's either that underdog trying to, you know, get to the heavyweight championship. Sami Zayn, obviously, I'm not sold on the shoulders. As I said, we've seen El Generico or Sami Zayn throw his shoulder out just by rotating it before a match with John Cena before. I think it's very, very, I would be nervous if I was booking it to put the belt on Sami Zayn moving forward, especially in a ladder match. So I think you've got to go from, I think you've got to go to AJ. I think you put the belt back onto AJ. I don't think AJ would have a long run. I think you've got to get him back up to the main event scene as well. But to me, I think the most consistent and reliable performer of the three is probably the phenomenal one, AJ Styles.
And I don't begrudge you for that pick in the least. That is a solid pick. I'm still rolling with Jeff because he is the most recent champion. He does need some reps after his horrible storyline this summer of sobriety and being used as a weapon against him with Sheamus. At least the bar fight was decent, but the storyline itself from the hit and run and the alleged drunkenness, it was a bit much for me. And when you have a pee-throwing incident banned on the West Coast of this country and we got it on the East Coast, that tells you all you need to know, that even the Fox executives was like, no, this is a bit too much for us. No pee here. It's a pee-free zone. So that's a make good for Jeff Hardy to potentially keep this title. But the question is, and I can apply this to you as well, Scott, who's next up for this title if Jeff and or AJ wins it on Sunday?
I think I can tell you who it is, but I don't think it's going to be exciting. That's my problem. I think you're probably looking down the lines of the next probably three challenges, regardless of who wins the belt. I think you're looking at probably the trio of probably Matt Riddle. He's going to float around there. Talk about a guy who's been watered down as well, but that's another conversation for another time. You're probably going to get an exhilarating contest with Baron Corbin. No NyQuil necessary. And there's every chance that they probably throw Sheamus back in there as well. I think in the Intercontinental Championship scene on SmackDown, there's six names. Three of them I just mentioned. The other three are in the ladder match. I can't believe they've given us Matt Riddle versus AJ already. I would be letting that simmer for probably even the better part of a year to 18 months, but just building that up quietly. But I think, you know, the Intercontinental Championship scene, it is a far cry from the Attitude Era and the days where you used to get Chris Jericho, Benoit, and Kurt Angle fighting for it. But, you know, I think that's where we're going to. I think that's what we've got next.
Yes, sadly, the Stepping Stone Championship is no longer that stepping stone it used to be, which is a shame because that title can make stars of future main eventers if they get their act together. Hopefully, that step will hopefully take place slowly but surely on Sunday. Next up is, I already know my guess, but you're going to take point first because this is probably the stone coldest lock of the evening. Down women, it is. Let's be real. Look at the track record this summer, and you, if you dare say anything else, I will end this show immediately. I will sick T-bar on you. That's how bad T-bar. This will be. Yes, T-bar. It's Bayley defending the SmackDown Women's Championship against Nikki Cross. And Scott, you would take point on this first, and you better say the right person.
Well, now the fear of God has been put into me here. I feel like retribution is floating around for about 2 hours outside my house here. Well, I'm very, very nervous now, but I believe, Kayla, I believe that the smart money at the moment is having Bayley retain over Nikki Cross. My reasons for that, because I can't tell whether you're getting angry or not, is that I think we are going to get the Alexa Bliss Nikki Cross split sooner rather than later. We've got Alexa Bliss sort of going off into La La Land. She's away with the fairies because obviously she's been affected by the Fiend. So I think you're going to have that Alexa Nikki split fairly soon, and it will mean more to the Sasha Banks Bayley storyline if the belt is on the line. Now, this was the second of two matches that I found it very, very hard to predict, mainly because I think that when I fantasy book this in my head, and my problem is I go to macro long-term storytelling, which the WWE don't do these days, but if I fantasy book this in my head, I think there's two very capable storylines and paths you could take. Both work, both make sense. But I think, Keela, I think that we are going to get potentially the Bayley and Sasha Banks match at either Hell in a Cell in October or Survivor Series in November. And I think that the feud and that match would be amplified if the belt was on the line. I don't think Alexa and Nikki need it. So again, without telling whether I've said the right thing or not here, my money is going to be on Bayley.
Scott, you've made the correct decision. T-Bar is not at your door. Mace might be lurking by the trees, and Slapjack is flapping jacks at the moment, but that's besides the point with retribution. But I do agree with you heartedly. My stone coldest lock of the night is Bayley retaining the SmackDown Women's Championship. Now, I will say that Bayley and Nikki Cross have had really good matches this summer, and Bayley has won every single match, which kind of waters down my enthusiasm for this battle, but it should be good nonetheless. And as you suggested, Alexa Bliss is really flirting with the dark side of the force with the dreadlocks and the pigtails and channeling the Fiend. And she does a great trance. I will give her that. And dare I say, she does Sister Abigail better than Bray Wyatt. And that is very impressive to me. So there's hope there with them having a side feud away from the title, which has been very key for SmackDown this year. You can have separate feuds away from the championship, as the money feud is Sasha Banks and Bayley, preferably at Hell in a Cell or Survivor Series. But in a perfect world, WWE would have patience until WrestleMania 2021 and blow this off officially, but they don't have that kind of patience, which is a shame because Bayley and Sasha have been the saving graces of this company this summer, floating between Raw, SmackDown, NXT, doing great work, elevating those women's tag team titles to a point where, damn, that's why they were created, for good defenses, good feuds, and great matches. But now it's time for Bayley and Sasha. Let's go back to where they were 5 years ago to now. They're better performers, they're better workers, they're better personalities, and they need this moment, preferably in a main event spot, to have the match we've been waiting for them to have for 5 damn years. Can we get that, please?
And I think you're right. I think we're going to get it. I think WrestleMania 2021 will be the occasion they blow the feud off. As you say, there's nothing wrong with having an interim match between them at any of those two pay-per-views mentioned, or even the Royal Rumble. But I think you're right. I think the blow-off has to be at the WrestleMania pay-per-view. And I actually do have to give the WWE kudos in this, because it's a brave move. I mean, I don't know about you, and obviously I haven't necessarily gone back and checked out your podcast this far back, but when they decided to turn Bayley heel, I mean, that was a real pivotal moment. And the first few weeks and months of that heel turn for Bayley, it wasn't necessarily the smoothest transition either. So I'm sure there was a lot of times where they were lying in bed at night thinking, did we do the right thing? Brave move to go into the feud with Bayley as the heel and Sasha Banks as the baby face. But I agree. I think they, if given the opportunity, they could do something really, really special. And I think given the time and the effort and the investment that the WWE universe has put into these two characters, I think they deserve it. And I think they'd knock it out of the park if you give it to them.
Absolutely. And to answer your question, actually doing my very first week of the podcast back in January, early February, I really got on Bayley because I remember there was a match at the Royal Rumble between her and Lacey Evans for the SmackDown Women's Championship. And this is before Bayley really figured out her character. And as you mentioned, it was rough going for a while. And I remember being so angry at her because she walked to the ring in this most depressed look on her face. Like, girl, why are you making me sad before the match starts? You got to really up your enthusiasm. I was depressed watching her, but at the time she didn't figure it out. And if you go back to the very first episode of when SmackDown had the empty arena show, and you had all those empty chairs and no one was there, the world was ending with the pandemic, and it was so awkward having Sasha and Bayley talk to chairs and not the hard camera. And to see where we were then to where we are now, that shows her maturity and growth to say, let me be myself. Let me feel this haircut. Let me style it up properly. Let me be a goofy but malicious heel when need be to get over. So I think she's been the most improved with this character because I got on her earlier this year, but she's so much better now and she's ready for this moment. And that might be a reason why WWE held off, because then Mopey Bayley versus bitchy, aggressive, awesome Bayley is so much better than what we got back in October of last year when she initially cut the hair and went Aunt Karen on all of us.
Do I dare say Bayley may have been the MVP of SmackDown this year?
You're not wrong, because the damn sure it wasn't Braun Strowman. Let's be honest.
Get these hands. I'll get these hands in Raw Underground in a warehouse somewhere.
With a really tight shirt and hard nipples.
You can't have a tight shirt without hard nipples.
No, they were very distracting on Monday. I think they might have blinded Retribution if they were in eyesight. But, hey, could have killed that gimmick in one night. But, hey, here we are. All right, next up is our co-main event to quote Roman Reigns, Cheeseburgers on Monday Night Raw is Drew McIntyre defending the WWE Championship against Randy Orton in an ambulance match. And I hate this gimmick because it's a way to protect someone from getting pinned, which is smart. But at the same time, we had this really good professional wrestling match at SummerSlam between the two in a backslide roll up for Drew McIntyre. And the idea is the Claymore or the RKO, which move would get either man down? And now you've watered it down to get the dude in an ambulance, pat the doors down, and drive away and win the championship. Is it a way to cover for Randy Orton if he doesn't win so he can stay protected? Is it a way to protect Drew from not being pinned? We know the answer to that, but who should walk out the champion? Who needs the belt more? And to me, I think Randy Orton has had a fantastic year on promos, in the ring. I'm discounting WrestleMania. I don't care what Edge or Orton says. It wasn't good, y'all. It was not good. What you did at Backlash was much better. It was far superior. But outside of that, Randy Orton has been incredible in the ring and on promos. And Drew McIntyre, with the eight ball squarely against him from the beginning of this pandemic, he has been a fighting champion, has been, how can I say this, reduced to semi-main events due to cinematic matches being more important. But his match usually was the best match on the show. So I'm very mixed as to who needs this belt more in the moment. It should be Drew McIntyre because he is the champion. He's carrying this brand. Randy Orton is a 13-time champion. He does not need this title at this point. If it's Edge and Orton at WrestleMania and the presumed I Quit match, you don't need the championship. So therefore, build up more opponents for Drew McIntyre, perfectly getting ready for the Royal Rumble, and let Randy Orton kill legends. Until then, he does not need this belt, because do we really need to see Orton beating everybody between now and WrestleMania? I think not.
Well, the risk of, exchanging fisticuffs here again, Keela. I think we're going to differ on this one as well. I agree, actually, with a lot of what you were saying regarding your case for Drew McIntyre retaining. I think it's very, very interesting. And you have to give McIntyre props, obviously, for a guy who started off in the company as a young man, then was future endeavored, built himself back up into the performer he is now, went through that road to redemption, finally got to the WWE World Heavyweight Championship in the main event of WrestleMania. And then, unfortunately, we've never got to see how McIntyre really performs in front of a live crowd with the championship. It's that opportunity for him and that test has actually been sort of stripped away from him. So I guess we'll never know, because we don't know, obviously, how long it will be until we get some sort of real solid crowd participation back into a WWE arena. I agree 100% with what you say. The stipulation is there to prevent two of their, probably I would say, three big main event acts on Monday Night Raw from being pinned. You've got to protect everyone as you move things around. But I think Randy Orton is going to become a 14-time, I believe you said there, 14-time WWE World Heavyweight Champion. I think that McIntyre will fall back into that upper mid-card role where I think he actually excels rather than holding the top prize. It then allows him to position and pivot towards a feud with Keith Lee. And it gives the company a different direction to go in. As you say, Randy Orton has been on fire with his promos. His in-ring work, which is normally quite lethargic, has been very, very crisp. Now, in saying this, don't get too excited, because I have not been invested really in a Randy Orton heavyweight championship reign since he beat Chris Benoit back in 2004 for the belt. But he is a star, he is marketable, he can talk, and he's probably approaching the final few years of his consistent in-ring work. I don't expect him to be able to deliver the bouts in 5 years' time than he can now. So I think if you're going to reward him with another run with the championship, I think it's probably a good time to do it now. My only issue, Keela, regardless of whether we're picking McIntyre or Orton, is that, as you say, the Monday Night Raw roster is very wafer thin when it comes to legit main eventers. I'm really struggling off the top of my head to think about too many other acts that could come into Monday Night Raw as your main event slots. There's no Cena, there's no Rock, there's no Austin, there's no Taker, there's no Triple H. Reigns is on the blue brand. That main event scene is looking very, very scarce. And I think I would probably put the belt on Randy. I think I would do that. I think there's no way I don't think McIntyre holds the belt from WrestleMania to WrestleMania. I don't remember the last time any WWE superstar did that, especially on the male's main brand. So I'm going with Randy.
You sound incredibly indecisive, as if this is something that's tugging at you and you don't know which way this is going to go until Sunday.
I think you're right. I think it's that classic case of, as you say, Randy Orton, 5 years' time, he may not be competing on a regular basis. So you have to invest in the future. I just don't know that I buy McIntyre as your main event champion. I think McIntyre as a heel is better than McIntyre as a face, but I think McIntyre as an upper mid-carder is better than McIntyre as your champion. I think that was the case with NXT as well. I thought it was very surprising when he became the NXT champion, mainly because I thought it wasn't a position that he would necessarily excel in. I would stand there and argue that McIntyre wasn't necessarily the greatest NXT champion they've had in their time. And I just think that's probably been replicated with the belt. It's great for international exposure that McIntyre was the first ever Scottish WWE World Heavyweight Champion. But I just think from a creative point, from a booking point of view, McIntyre in the top spot makes things harder if I was in control of the book. And therefore, I just think as much as I wouldn't necessarily have Randy Orton as my first pick, I think Randy Orton is a versatile champion that gives you options to choose from and allows McIntyre the freedom to feud with Keith Lee as your second tier upper mid-carders.
I do agree with you. And I do go back to Drew McIntyre's run at NXT a few years ago. And I think the fans, dare I say, not all of them, but a sect that's really screwed up on the indie scene, they did not really appreciate what he went through to get back to WWE. And you had a tinge of resentment on NXT. Wasn't that full blood star that he is now on the main roster. And there's actually a benefit to your idea of if Orton wins on Sunday, McIntyre can get reset. And I'm presuming a lot of people, if people were in the building every Monday night, they would love him. But without that gauge to say, well, were they like him? You might want to reset, get ready for 2021. And if you do choose to put the belt back on him with people, then it would be a much better run. And hopefully you have contenders lined up. Now, I will say this for WWE, with the possible exception of Dolph Ziggler, who has been beaten down beyond recognition of being a legitimate challenger for anything at this point, Drew McIntyre has had really good opponents, from Seth Rollins to Bobby Lashley to Randy Orton to Dolph Ziggler this summer heading into the fall. So I thank WWE for that, because that was my main concern. When Drew McIntyre becomes champion, who's got next? But at this point, you might be right in the sense of he might need to be reset in the mid-card scene, upper mid-card, you know, just scrapping the main event. When people come back, then maybe that will be the moment for the coronation. And unlike the five coronations for Roman Reigns, this will actually stick because people will actually have a chance to enjoy it this time if people are in the building, hopefully by some point in 2021.
Correct. And I think while you were talking there, I just pulled up the recent list of NXT champions. And if you would indulge me here, let me give you a quick list of some of the names that have held that belt since the inception in 2012. And there's one glaring mark here. So Seth Rollins, the first champion, back all the way in 2012. Then you've got the likes of Big E Langston, Bo Dallas, Adrian Neville, Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, Finn Balor, Samoa Joe, Shinsuke Nakamura, Bobby Roode, Drew McIntyre, Adrian Cien Almas, Cien Almas, Tommaso Ciampa, Aleister Black, Johnny Gargano, Adam Cole, Keith Lee, Karrion Kross, and then back to Finn Balor. There's a lot of names that a lot of independent wrestling fans adore. It's essentially the belt of the future, but there's one glaring championship reign that took place on TakeOver Brooklyn 3 on August 19th, 2017. And as you say, that was the Scottish psychopath Drew McIntyre. It stands out like dog's balls compared to the other names that are on this list. You know, you go from Samoa Joe, Shinsuke, Bobby Roode, Drew McIntyre, Andrade Cien Almas, Aleister Black, Tommaso Ciampa. You know, you're looking at who's who of NXT, and then you have McIntyre in there. So I don't know. I'm not too sure. I would have Randy take the belt. That's what I'm going to go with. I'm more confident now, Kilo, than I was when I started. I'm going to go with Randy taking the belt.
And we talked it through. We worked it out. You have the evidence to back you up. Now you're more sure on this pick. And for the record, when I do my post-wrap show on Monday, I'm going to go back through our predictions. And I'm going to see if you're right. And if you're wrong, T-bar's at the door, sir. Mace is at the trees. And Flapjack somewhere in your kitchen fixing flapjacks. So get ready for that.
I might just go down to the local costume shop and buy a Bane mask and say, I'm bought in. I'm bought in, T-Bar.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we shall see come Sunday night whether or not Randy Orton will walk away a 14-time world champion. And now it's time to quote Roman Reigns one more time on this show. The filet mignon, in my opinion, the match I'm looking forward to is for the Universal Champion. It is the tribal chief of WWE, according to Paul Heyman, the reigning defending Universal Champion, Roman Reigns, who vows to wear no shirt on Sunday. And I'm sure a lot of ladies are very happy about that piece of news. Going up against his family, his cousin, like his brother, Jey Uso, for the belt. And Scott, in this filet mignon main event, I'm going to let you take point on really, really the third or fourth stone cold lock of the evening.
Well, I'd love to have the confidence to just throw out a Jey Uso and based on the research, just throw that name out and then say, and this is why I think. But I think all my credibility would go down the drain very, very quickly. Let's talk about Roman Reigns, shirt on or shirtless, nipples out or nipples in. Roman Reigns, this aspect and version of Roman Reigns is the character and persona that the WWE needed to pull the trigger on probably 2 to 3 years ago. If you think about all the WrestleMania matches, all the main events, and the pushes that he got, imagine how we would look back on history differently if this Roman Reigns character had been introduced then, this slightly edgier version of Roman Reigns rather than the suffering fuckatash aspect that we remember. As I said, we've talked at length about how this match speaks to the lack of depth, of the SmackDown main event scene. At this point, scrap the brand splits. I think that's what we've decided here today. It's not deep enough if you don't have the brands back together. As you say, Braun's off play fighting with other grown men. Shane McMahon is screaming and sweating profusely over a microphone. The Fiend has been watered down to through two nonsensical championship reigns and then subsequently defeats without much fanfare. It's a hell of an opportunity for Jey Uso to rub shoulders with his cousin, who is in a much more main event spot. It's also good that we've got 3 to 4 weeks build. And in many ways, considering we've pivoted away from the Fiend and Braun Strowman storyline, I think that feels like a long time ago now. I feel like the WWE needed this, and the second they pulled the trigger on Roman becoming a more heelish aspect, wreck everyone and leave style character, I think that sort of has reinvigorated a bit of interest in Roman Reigns as a character. I think it's a cold day in hell before Jey Uso walks away as the WWE World Heavyweight Champion. This is a filler-style WWE Universal Championship match. It will not main event the show. It will be somewhere in the mid-card. I would go and say, Keela, in your terminology, stone-cold prediction here. Professor Pro Wrestling here says that I reckon this match you'll be lucky to go any longer than 10 minutes. I would squash Jey Uso in probably about 5 minutes and then spend the next 5, really putting over in a post-match angle how much of a heel Roman Reigns is. Yeah, Jey Uso is not going to be hitting the pay window for the winner's paycheck. He's going to be staring up at the lights, counting the holes in the ceiling. And unfortunately, he's going to have to pack his bags and head on to the next WWE Thunderdome because he ain't winning the Universal Championship, not by a long shot.
And that is how you make a stone cold prediction. That is a lock of locks, the lockiest of locks. Yes, is Roman Reigns retaining this championship? This is such an easy prediction. Now, my one hope is it's somewhat competitive before Roman absolutely destroys him, as it should be. Roman has been the highlight, the saving grace, with the exception of Sasha and Bayley on SmackDown the past month or so. He's been incredible by doing the bare minimum.
Yep.
I love his t-shirts. They're very literal. Wreck shop and leave and then win and that's it. And Paul Heyman is incredible. He's more subdued in this role because he realizes Roman Reigns won shits here. I'm just here getting a check. I'm being a representation. I don't have the same level of enthusiasm for Brock Lesnar because I'm not Roman Reigns' equal. He saved me because I had nowhere else to go. And it's a very deep storyline that kind of blurs the lines of reality and fiction that Brock Lesnar is at home right now. He's not going to be working without a crowd at the moment. And Paul Heyman was dismissed as the creative director of Monday Night Raw. So he really felt some kind of way this summer. And Roman Reigns says, hey, I'm going to give you a lifeline. I'm going to hook you up. You're going to be standing behind me, not beside me. And we're going to run shop together. And I think it's a great partnership. And Roman has been incredible. I expect a good match on Sunday with Jey Uso. As for main event status, I don't think so because of how it's going to be booked ultimately. But I will say this. If you thought the reenactment of the Lion King from last year or something, well, on Sunday, you're going to witness King Roman, Scar, and Lil Jey Uso.
Uh-oh.
Oh, poor Mufasa. He's going to kill him. Mm-hmm. It's quite the sight, and mm-hmm. I'm going to love it. Long live the tribal chief.
I feel like, Keela, that after all that, I feel like it wouldn't surprise me if I saw a WrestleSoaptopia exclusive t-shirt now saying, nipples out and leave. Look, I think it's very interesting here as well. And the way you've built that up as well, think about this as well. All you need is one more match. As the crowd chants, one more match or 5 more minutes. Think about this now. WrestleMania 2021 or 2022, depending on how you want to do it. And I know I'm long-term storyline booking here, but I can't help it. Imagine you have Roman Reigns, the tribal king. He is out there destroying everyone, just laying waste to the entire WWE division. You can't touch him because he wrecks everyone with nipples out and leaves. And then suddenly, just when there's no one left, the beast incarnate returns. And suddenly now, Keela, you have Brock Lesnar, one more match as the face, coming in to prove that he is the alpha male of the WWE against a Roman Reigns heel with Paul Heyman. His allegiance and alignment is up in the air. No one knows what's going on. It's a hell of a main event. Maybe it should be booked on the rewriting WWE 2K series. I wish I could. It's all AI. And I guarantee the AI will do it before WWE does. But there you go. The way you built that up, just think about a Brock Lesnar face return versus a Roman Reigns heel champion match. All you need is one more. Even if you just pay Brock Lesnar one more payday, and you can get a hell of a storyline out of it.
I would love it, because it would test Paul Heyman's allegiances. And most importantly, this is genius, because we've gotten Brock and Roman over and over and over again. And with the exception of WrestleMania 31 in 2015, none of the matches have been great, because first, we've seen it repetitively. And secondly, the fans rejected it. So in this case, with a revamped Roman Reigns, with a babyface Brock Lesnar, you could actually get what we had a few years ago with Goldberg and Brock Lesnar 2.0 from what we got at WrestleMania 20. That was so bad, but you got the redo in 2016, the Survivor Series 86 second knockout, the great 5-minute sprint at WrestleMania 3 years ago. And now you have Brock Lesnar, a seasoned vet, a badass babyface, and Roman Reigns, the baddest man in WWE as a heel, Paul Heyman, is torn between two of his creations. Book that for WrestleMania, and I guarantee you the people will actually love it, because you have a rooting interest, and both men will be over.
That's right. As Tony Schiavone would say, they're hanging in the rafters, and that's going to put butts in seats. I don't know, man. I think maybe we should... Maybe WWE should listen to this podcast, and they just say, hey, Scott and Keela, they may know a thing or two, don't they?
That is true. And I have spoken several things into existence on this podcast. I spoke the debut of Angel Garza when I said, Humberto needs his cousin's personality. And bam, 1 week later, here's Angel Garza. Like, thank you, WWE. So sometimes speaking things into existence, and you never know who's listening, things might just happen that way. And with that, this wraps up a really fun prediction show previewing Clash of Champions Gold Rush. I had a lot of fun, and I can guarantee you when I listen back to the Retribution rant, I might cry tears of more joy on top of the joy I had listening to it at first. So Scott, thank you so much for being on the show. And before I let you go, as always, tell the people where they can find you on social media, and let them know once again about your YouTube channel, recapping the wackiness of WWE in the best way, better than the creative team of Monday Night Raw.
Well, thank you very much, Keela. I appreciate you having me on. I had a blast as well. Going to be very interesting to see which of us, as I said, I don't want to start a fight, but which of us ends up with the most predictions right. Of course, make sure after you are done listening to this podcast and all of other Keela's uploads here at the WrestleSoaptopia podcast, you check out the Wacky World of Wrestling on YouTube.com. As I said, we are doing the rewriting WWE 2K series as a flagship, completely AI simulated universe mode. We do not touch a thing. As I said, the community, it is a very positive wrestling community here. We are all wrestling fans at the end of the day. So we just sit along for the ride and laugh together at all the twists and turns. I promise it's a good time. And you know what? You don't have to just be a WWE 2K fan. You can be a fan of Fire Pro Wrestling. You can be a fan of the old Nintendo 64 AKI style games. It doesn't matter. It will all be coming to the Wacky World of Wrestling. So as I said, when you're done listening to the WrestleSoaptopia podcast, make sure you go check out the Wacky World of Wrestling. Give us a subscribe and show us some love, and let us know that you heard the podcast as well, because obviously I would love to do this again with you, Keela.
Yes, and dare I say, I might offer you a permanent spot as the monthly prediction show captain of this ship, if you choose to accept this mission, because you were that great on this episode, just for the Retribution rant alone.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed, because my heart rate and blood pressure went through the roof.
I took great pleasure in that. As it rapidly elevated during the moments, every time you said slapjack, an angel got its wings. It really did. I felt that. I felt Mace and T-Bar in this episode. It was beautiful. But that's what we do here. We try to add levity to a shitty storyline. And once again, we have to give credit to the actual people that play these characters on social media for trying to make chicken shit into chicken salad, because it's not easy. But they're trying after all. And on that note, thank you guys for listening. And I'll be back tomorrow morning with episode number 35 of the SmackDown Wind Down, recapping tonight's episode of Friday Night SmackDown on Fox. Here's hoping that the Go Home Show in the Thunderdome is better than what we got on Monday Night Raw. But that's not saying a lot, is it? But you know where to find me on social media, at Lady Wrestling X on Twitter, on Instagram at WrestleSoaptopia. You know where to download the shows everywhere we listen to your podcasts, from Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, all the spots. You know what to do. Hit play and subscribe today. Until then, enjoy your Friday. Stay safe out there. And don't forget to wash those hands. See you later, boys and girls. Take care.